The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And good night. Welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Denothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you for joining tonight for another exciting show for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian Society. Thank you for joining us here. We're on Guardian Radio 96.9, and we are live also on Facebook. So for all those watching on Facebook, shout out to you guys. We're live on our page, The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. D. Archer. So I'm a family medicine specialist, consultant, and I deal with primary care. We talk a lot about health issues and things that are going on in the country, in the world, and some social topics as well, which we all find is needed. So I want to thank my sponsor, of course. The show is sponsored by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical and concierge needs. So we do all of your primary care needs in our primary care clinic. We're located in the Bahamas Heart Center. You can give us a call, 3221, or check us online, mcs@familymedicine.com. Instagram, medical_concierge_services, and also on Facebook, Medical Concierge Services. So lots of ways to find us, lots of ways to get in touch. And of course, we do our concierge services. So if you need home care, or you need a doctor to come out, we will help you with that because we want to get you the best health care where you need it. So your home, your office, your boat, wherever it may be. So there's a new, there's a tax out there. There's no tax, I think, right now on your super yacht. So if this is a great time to buy, I guess. So tonight we're going to talk a bit about influenza and the flu. Everyone is kind of sick right now. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. We kind of forgotten about the flu with all the things that have been going on, but you still have to protect yourself from the flu. The flu is really kind of affecting a lot of people. It's in this flu to me in this season seems a lot like the flu we had just before COVID, where if you remember in 2019, September, October, November, later in the year, a lot of people seem to have gotten really, really sick. There was a flu that was lasting about 2 to 3 weeks. There were people being hospitalized and stuff like that. A lot of people felt like that was actually maybe the COVID before we actually knew about it. But, you know, everyone knows just anecdotally a lot of people were sick. And there were some flu viruses, there was a flu virus and different viruses that was going on. But we didn't really pay a lot of attention to it. And so we forget that the flu really does exist. And we're going to talk about a few of the numbers of what that means. And so we tend to forget that the flu comes every year. Now we're kind of out of the season, so we're kind of out of sync for that. But we're still seeing a lot of cases popping up. I mean, you know, there are millions of estimated cases of the flu every year. Just in the United States alone, there are millions of cases. And what they predict is that there's anywhere between like 21 million to 60 million cases around the world in terms of the flu. So when we look at past flu seasons, we see that numbers for the flu had been going up even prior to the pandemic. We look at a time like 2010, 2020, 2011, there were about estimated 21 million cases through the CDC. And then when we look closer to 2018, 2019, that number was about 36 million. The year before that was 45 million and estimated to be even higher than up to about 95 million cases. So, you know, that's lots of flu. And what about deaths? People always ask me, well, Dr. Archer, we're concerned about this current pandemic because of the deaths. Well, people have always died from the flu, because the flu, as we're going to talk about, has different manifestations, which does lead to death. And we are unaware that in the Bahamas alone, almost 100 people every year would pass away from the flu. And so what are the kind of key things about the flu? The flu is basically from a virus. That virus is the influenza virus. It's a very contagious respiratory illness. It affects the throat, it affects the nose, and sometimes even the lungs. So it sounds very similar to what we've gone through. It can cause mild to severe disease, and it can lead to death. And so if you look on things like the CDC's website, you'll see something like, the best way to not get deal with the flu is to get vaccinated of the flu vaccine. It's as low as 30% to up to 60%. So it's really not here or there, because the threshold for an effective vaccine is 50% and above. And you can see, because it's similar, where it's a type of virus that changes from year to year, they would have to consistently keep changing that vaccine. Now, what symptoms typically do you have of the flu, and then what makes that different from any common cold or any other viral illness that you may have? It's really important to know, because it lets you know when you should be concerned, when you should not be so concerned. So like we said, mild to severe symptoms and even death. But people tend to have a fever, or they have a feeling of fever and chills. There could be a cough, there's a sore throat, runny nose, stuffy nose, muscle aches, we all know about that, headaches, fatigue. And some people even have vomiting and diarrhea, because this is a viral illness. But this is more commonly seen in children. So these are the kinds of questions when you go to the doctor we'll ask. And it lets us know about the severity and if we need to be concerned about it at all. It's important to know that not everyone will have a fever. So you can have a mild flu and not have a fever. And that is important to know. But when we talk about fever, fever tends to be very important for us as doctors, because it lets us gauge how well your body might be fighting a particular illness. So you don't want to have prolonged fever for numerous amount of days. And so we're going to talk about as well which symptoms you look out to, when would you want to go to the doctor, versus when you can probably treat it at home. And the flu is like a virus. It spreads through mainly droplets made when you cough or you sneeze. It can land on other people's mouths or noses or somewhere nearby. And often people get the flu from touching maybe a surface which had a recent droplet on it, or touching their own mouth or nose where there might be possible droplets. And so when people are coughing and sneezing, you just want to be out of the area, because that is the way that it is spread. And so when we look at how many people get sick every year, we see that about anywhere from 3 to 11% of people, although that number used to be 5 to 20% of people, will technically get the flu in a given season. And one of the interesting things about these viral illnesses is you'll find that usually as a child, you catch them more often, and over time, you're less inclined. And that has to do with your body building up some resistance to some of these viruses over time. And then you'll see that you'll have spells in which you may catch the flu more often. And it has to do with the way that viruses reproduce and change over time. They're always constantly changing, because our immune system is fighting them, and they have to adapt to survive. And so you always have to keep on the ball in terms of watching your immunity and keeping it up, because there are numerous viruses out there. So commonly 15 to 20% these days, we say 3 to 11% of the population at any time is the estimate of people who are gonna have a symptomatic flu during the season. And the season is usually between October and April. So as you can see, we're quite late. And I think it's because we're just kind of coming out We're seeing a change in the pattern of the flu season that we usually see. It seems to be a lot more extensive, a lot longer, but a lot of people are going and getting tested for COVID and realizing that it's not COVID, it's definitely the flu. It's back, where'd it go? But it seems to be back with us. And so we found that children are more likely to get sick from the flu and people who are over the age of 65. And older people are least likely to get sick from the influenza. So children are mainly the ones that are getting pretty sick. And by age group, we see 9.3% of children between the ages of 0 and 17 will usually catch the flu during the season, 8.8% of adults, 18 to 64 years old, and then 3.9% of adults over the age of 65. So it's almost like the reverse in terms of who is more directed to. This means that children younger than 18 are more than twice as likely to develop symptomatic flu symptoms than perhaps persons who are much older. So how do we kind of estimate it? Because the number of persons who get the flu is not a number that we particularly count. It's usually done as an estimate because unlike, let's say, COVID, we don't go around testing people for the flu. So they kind of have an idea by the numbers that they see and who's coming in, and they take a proportion of the sick people that they're seeing and they use that number, and that's how they get the estimate. So there could be a lot more people, and because a lot of people may have mild symptoms, there may be a lot less. And so the population gets infected and develops flu symptoms every year, and they just kind of make an estimate. The 3% estimate came from the 2011-2012 season, which the H1N1, which is what we call the influenza virus, predominated the season, classified as being a low severity. So that was a time when the flu was low, very low in the community. And so that's where the lower number comes from. But of course, about quite earlier on, those numbers can be much, much higher. And we see that you can have quite a variation in your flu season. The immediate incidence of the flu illness during two seasons was around about 11%, and that was 2012-2013. And at that time, it was the H3N2 predominant season and classified as being moderate severity. And then in 2014 and 2015, the H3N2 predominant season classified as being more of a higher severity. So as you can see, there's different variations in the type of viruses that are being produced, and it can be from a low to very moderate. So yes, I see you online there, D'Angelo Minus. Thank you for watching. Thank you for sending a shout out. Those persons who are online, thank you for watching. So we have to look at the variation of that in time, and we're never quite sure if it's going to be a bit more on the low versus moderate side of severity. And so we have to be cautious for all ages, and especially with the children, they're back in the environment. So a lot of kids are coming in with coughs, colds, flu-like viruses, and you know, parents are very concerned, but we just have to remember that the cold and the flu still exist. So when are you really contagious? When are you more likely to pass on the flu to another person? And this is important because it allows you, if you do have some symptoms, to be able to stay in and not infect a bunch of other people. And so you don't want to spread it. And so people are usually most contagious in the first 3 to 4 days of the illness. Some otherwise healthy adults may be able to infect others one day before symptoms actually start, and up to 5 to 7 days after becoming sick. And some children with weakened immune systems may be even to infect even longer. So you can see that this is anywhere between 3 to 7 days is going to be the time period, and sometimes even longer. So people are sometimes shocked that they might just have a flu and it's lasting for a very long period of time, but the flu does change in severity. And so this is very possible. The onset of symptoms, the time frame a person is exposed versus infected to the flu usually begins after about 2 days. And this can range from anywhere from 1 to 4 days. So usually if you do have the flu, think about where you've been, what you've been doing for the past few days. That usually will tell you, you'll kind of remember in the back of your mind, someone may have been coughing or sneezing or you made a shaken hands with someone who was coughing and sneezing and then rubbed your face. And so those are the types of things and the time period usually you will know. And there are various complications of the flu that are possible. And one of the most common would be bacterial pneumonia. So you can start with a viral illness, which then leads into actually an illness that there is bacteria. And when it gets a lot more serious like this, this is really when you need to see the doctor and you may need to get different or other treatment than we would normally give. You can also have ear infections related to the common flu virus. As a complication, you might develop an ear infection. Sinus, you could have worsening of some chronic conditions that you may already have, such as congestive heart failure, asthma, or even diabetes. So, you know, we say that word commonly, the flu, but the flu can have lots of different complications. And who are the persons who are most high risk in developing some of these complications? So anyone can get the flu, but serious problems are usually related and happen to be related to the age of the patient. And some persons are what we consider high risk for developing serious flu-like complications when they get sick. So people over the age of 65 and people who would, of any age with certain chronic medical conditions such as asthma, diabetes, heart disease, pregnant women, and children younger than the age of 5. So, you know, that's quite a spectrum if you do have a chronic disease, especially diabetes. And you say, why is diabetes related to a lot of these infections? Well, diabetes, persons who are diabetic, especially those who are uncontrolled, they tend to have a lowered immune system. So diabetes, high levels of sugar usually start affecting your white blood cells. And so they have an effect where they're not as useful as they should be. And therefore, diabetics tend to not do well with infections. And so you tend to most things. And so you want to prevent as much as possible. And an important part of that is, you know, eating healthy, doing as you should be doing, drinking lots of fluids, kind of staying away from people who are ill. And if you're ill yourself, you want to stay in. and you do those things in order to reduce your risk and serious complications. Hand washing, I think one of the few things that have been really good, that is always like a great thing when it comes to viral illness, is when you're talking about hand washing hygiene, because washing your hands, we're touching things, we're touching surfaces, we're shaking hands with people. That's going to be really, really important to have frequent hand washing, right? And it slows the spread of germs and that causes the respiratory illnesses that's coming from our noses, our throats, and our lungs. And any illness that's similar to the flu, you can do the same, of course. How do we really diagnose the flu? It's really difficult to distinguish the cold from the flu. And usually because it's viral, we have to determine if it's viral or is it a bacterial respiratory response. And we don't really test for the flu, so it's a very clinical diagnosis, but it's something that doctors kind of hone into after a period of time. And so, because we don't do that direct test. But what you tend to find is usually in a bacterial infection, someone will be a lot more sick. Sometimes it even comes on the back end of having a viral illness. So what we tend to do with our patients is we tend to monitor their blood, their temperature and what's going on with them. You give them a time period. If they don't seem to be doing better, on start thinking whether this is what we call a viral with a bacterial component on top of it. At that point in time, you really want to see your doctor. For kids, you want to look at if your temperature is 100.6 and above, that is a fever when it comes to children. And that's when you want to call your doctor or find out if you need to do anything further. So have that conversation. For adults, usually a low-grade fever of 99 is sufficient to be a fever, and especially if you're having chills with that. That can be a sign of maybe that what's going on. So you would try to temper that with some over-the-counter medication. If you're having other symptoms like sneezing, you might want to have to take some antihistamines. You're going to take some cough medication. Symptomatic relief is going to be your number one thing. And then you want to bring down the fever as much as possible. And we sometimes use a combination with medications, whether it be children or adults, to combat the fever over time. So you want that fever to really be down within 3 to 5 days. When you're going more than that, we start thinking that this might be something more. It may be bacterial, and you may need more prescription medication. Now, when it comes to the complications of the flu, things like pneumonia, you start seeing a little bit of a difference in the symptoms, and maybe come like something like shortness of breath comes into play. And then we have to look to see if you're developing a pneumonia. So if you develop shortness of breath, you're treating yourself at home, you really need to go and speak with your doctor and go from there. You know, in the United States, you use a lot of antivirals and different things, but usually most people can get over the flu quite easily on their own. I like a regimen that's heavy on vitamins, so I do a lot of vitamin C, and I bump that up to about 1 gram per day if I feel like a cold or a flu is coming on, and kind of go from there. So I don't use a lot of the viral medications unless it's a serious problem, and then we go from there. Similarly, some of these things, you don't want to use a lot of medication in a pregnant person. So doing vitamins, rest, lots of fluids is going to be extremely important in that. And that alone can pretty much cut down your time period. And people don't understand the importance of rest. The importance of rest when you are dealing with a viral illness specifically. We tend to not feel well, but the minute we feel better, we try to go about our normal daily activity. But that rest is so, so important. And by sleeping and maintaining your number of hours of sleep, your body is able to fight off infection so much better. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the metrics of the flu, and we're also going to open up our phone lines, but we're going to take a short break and we're going to come right back. And on the other side, you can join in on the conversation if you have a question, if you have a concern, or if you have another topic that you want us to get into tonight. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair, you say that.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there cause the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl, everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing, just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas, so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
So, what would you like to discuss?
Insurance, Doc. It's so frustrating. I go to the mall for motor, drive to Bay Street to get a home quote, swing east to file a medical claim, then go west for a pensions appointment. Don't even get me started about life.
I'm going to prescribe CG Atlantic. They have all the insurance you're looking for.
Really? Thanks.
With all the insurance you need, we're like a doctor that doesn't waste your time and money. CG Atlantic. Good like that.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Denotha Archer Cartwright. Thank you for listening in online and on Guardian 96.9. As you said, we would open the phone lines. Tonight we're talking about the flu. It's not gone away, it's right there, and we seem to be getting hit pretty hard this season. A lot of people coming in with cold and flu symptoms. And so we can't forget that it does exist and it has been affecting us for a very long time. And we have to just get back into the mindset that we can deal with the cold and the flu. And so if you want to join us or you have a comment or a question or anything pertaining to health, we're going to take you your call, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259 are kind of on Zoom Live. So if you want to jump into the conversation, you can give us a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We were talking about the flu, and we kind of went through, what makes a flu a flu. And then we're kind of going to just talk about the difference quickly between the cold and the flu. And how that affects us. And so just looking at it, usually we compare the cold versus the flu based on symptoms, whether there's a fever, aches, chills, fatigue and weakness, whether there's sneezing, chest discomfort, cough, a stuffy nose, a sore throat, or a headache. And so when we look at the cold and the flu in terms of symptoms and offset, usually with the cold, it's kind of gradual. You kind of feel it coming on. You're not feeling too well. You might feel a little off and not really sick. So the cold and its symptoms tend to come on very gradually, and you kind of feel it coming on. Whereas the flu is a lot more abrupt. You kind of just bang, oh, wow, I'm not feeling well. What is this? So it tends to be much more abrupt than the common cold. In terms of fever, if you have a cold, it's usually really rare. And so you don't really start off with a major feature being a fever, whereas with a flu, you're going to have that fever. It's usually a really strong component of having the flu. And so that helps you to start determining, hey, is this just a common cold that I need to sleep off, or is this the flu? When we talk about aches, colds, there might be slight aches, there may be nothing at all. You're going to have a more achy feeling if you're having a more like a flu experience. And so if you're having a lot of aches and pains, you're more trending towards it being a flu. When we talk very in common with a cold, but you'll find that, you know, that fever, cough, cold, fever, and chills will be more common with a flu. So it's a bit more severe in terms of the symptoms. When we look at fatigue and weakness, you're going to have that sometimes with a cold, but that's going to be a usual feature of the flu. Sneezing is usually really common with a cold. And so you might start off sneezing, and that might be the gradual kind of symptom that you start to feel. Whereas when you have the flu, it's going to be only sometimes there'll be a little bit of sneezing. It's usually not a big feature of what's going on. Chest discomfort or cough, this can be mild to moderate in a cold. but this is very common in a flu. Stuffy nose, very common in a cold, less common in a flu type situation, but sometimes you can have that as well. And you talk about sore throat, it's really, really more common in a cold, but you can also have that in a flu. When we talk about headaches, usually it's really rare in a cold. I know some people talk about having a head cold and having a lot of stuffiness, but you're going to have that more often in terms of a flu, of having that common headache going on. So the distinguishing features really, as you can see, the fever, the aches and pains and the chills, you're going to have those symptoms and you're going to have them a bit longer in terms of the current flu metrics for 2020. One and 22, we'll take a look at that, as well as the flu season in 2020 and 2021. What I found very interesting is that, especially and if we talk about in terms of children, the statistics that I saw, and I believe this was in the U.S., that you had about 195 pediatric deaths from the flu alone. That was in 2019, October 1st, 2019 to April 4th, 2020. The flu resulted in both 39 to 56 million cases. There were between 410 and 740,000 hospitalizations, and you had 24,000 to 62,000 deaths. So quite a few amount of deaths. And remember, we are not out there testing for the flu. This was just persons that we knew for sure that got the flu test. And you had about 195 pediatric deaths. Now, the following year, the pediatric deaths from the flu had turned into one. So is some of those deaths maybe incorporated in the COVID results? That's a possibility, because to go from 195 to about to one is really interesting. So we know that some of the testing doesn't differentiate between the flu and the COVID. So that could be a part of what was happening there. And so a lot of discussion about whether it's flu versus coronavirus. And so health officials are kind of just looking at that as a whole. And because we do have to remember, and all of your primary care providers, that the flu does exist. In New York State, they had 157,758 positive cases between October 2019 and April 4th. And there were 17 deaths there and 575 confirmed cases since October 1st of those confirmed cases. And so in terms of hospitalization, 72%, a total of 19,713 influenza-related hospitalizations were reported in October 1st, 2019 and March 28th, 2020. 72% were associated with influenza A and 27% with influenza B, which can be reversed from season to season. The overall cumulative hospitalization rate was 67.9 per 100,000 population over the same period. This number was higher than seasons previously during that time period, except for in 2017-2018. So we can see that we had a really high flu burden just prior to the pandemic. Hospitalization rates in children 0-4 and adults 18 to 49 years old were highest reported according to the CDC and surpassed the rates that had happened during the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. So I think when we see these kind of viral illnesses brewing, it's kind of a sign that this, you know, something that's going on everywhere. So influenza A versus influenza B. So they're different that create the flu. And both of them cause the typical flu seasons. We talked about fever, fatigue, body aches, chills, sore throat, and cough. And unlike patients, we'll be able to tell the difference between the two. That's really something that we do in terms of testing. So when we go into the lab, if it's a serious case of influenza, then we would not only just test to see if it's influenza, but also the type of influenza. And they put all this information in databases around the world. But of course, we talk about the impact being more on children, which is interesting because children are more likely to be affected by the flu than even COVID. And even in terms of death, you can see I think around less than 500 deaths in the U.S. across the entire pandemic, whereas it is lower than at times the number for the flu for children during a year. So definitely a difference there in terms of who's affected by what. We can see that influenza B had popped up early in 2020, and it came earlier than usual. The traditional influenza A, which we all know about, appeared earlier than influenza B. But that was not the case in the beginning of 2020. Roughly 70% of early flu cases were influenza B, and about 30% had been influenza A. And they talk about whether the flu vaccine is effective or not, and whether they reduce doctors' visits by a percentage or not in children. But rates among children and young adults were higher early in the season compared to recent seasons. So it wasn't really a very large statistical difference. The vaccine has, they feel it's for influenza for the season, but of course doesn't really stop it. So how do we treat? How do we treat influenza? So if you feel like you are flu-ish, you're not feeling well, what are the first kind of things that we do? And we talk about the very basics, and these are the things that you need that will keep you from having to go maybe to your doctor's office or even to the hospital. You want to start off by drinking lots of fluids. And this helps your body to hydrate, this helps your body to recuperate, and it helps you when you have a temperature. So you want to drink cool fluids, maybe not cold, but cool. And this helps with the chills, any sweats, dizziness, and the thirst that you may be having. It's always best to drink low sugar sports drinks that contain electrolytes can also help you. So you see, like, this is the only time that we ever would suggest stuff like Gatorade, but kids' Pedialyte, those types of things with electrolytes are probably helpful because you're losing a lot of that as you fight the illness. But I also tell my patients that they should drink a lot of water as well, just to keep hydrated, keep some on them. And it really, really helps with the symptoms, and it helps to combat fever. We talked about this earlier, getting a lot of rest. So rest is super important when you're fighting infections. You do that well when you're in a deep state of sleep. And so according to the new study by Rockefeller University Press, the study shows that during sleep, the body's immune cells attack the infected cells and fight off the virus. So just in your sleep, you can really help to make things better. So get yourself a good night's rest. If you feel like a cough or a cold or a flu is coming on, the best first action is to get that really good rest. So you should get as much away from work, and you want to stay away from work for at least 24 hours symptom-free. And you want to do the least amount of physical exertion as possible. So if you're a person that exercises a lot, you may want to give your body some time to just kind of get over itself. If you're at work, you know, you want to get over your symptoms and be kind of clear for about 24 hours before you return. So if you're going to need that time off, you're going to need to call your doctor or come in. But I suggest in this time, especially with restrictions, you want to give your doctor a call, because sometimes if it's just a flu, you can get a couple of days and then you can go back to work. If it's really bad, you know, you need to come in and be seen, then you should come in and be seen. So technology helps us to do something sometimes even over, different platforms so that we can see patients. And then, you know, if you are really, really sick, then, you know, usually if it seems like you were around someone with COVID, then, you know, maybe suggested to take a COVID test. The different medications that doctors can prescribe. Some people like things like Tamiflu to alleviate flu symptoms. It's really a symptomological approach. Oh, we have a caller. I'm sorry, caller. I didn't see you. Caller, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Yes, good night, Dr. D.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm going through some sanity. I messed up my finger this morning doing some work. But listen, you know what I wanted to touch on?
Sure.
Is very interesting. You know, I haven't had the flu from, like, 1998.
Wow, you're good.
And so I remembered it very well. It is so painful to the throat and the fever and just the headache. And at the time, I used to smoke. marijuana, and so I remember not even wanting to smoke, you know. But the thing is, I remember it being exactly the way you describe it. The symptoms come on quickly, sandpaper like. So I haven't had that nasty feeling for so long, and you know the phlegm, which people call cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being just like you have this aching joint sometime, and so what happened is I developed chronic sinusitis, and so sometimes my sinus be full, and I have a lot of mucus. So I am naturally saying that the mucus, the excess mucus in the sinus cavity, has to be an impediment to the virus, because it's no other reason. I don't know. I guess, but that's immunity. Also, I stay in the sun and I work out a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying it's the excess.
most people, you're getting your vitamin D.
Yeah, you see, and I see mushrooms also, and so most people don't realize is that the mucus serves a purpose. We just get in this idea that mucus, you understand? But can I have some fun tonight for 2 minutes, Dr. D, before you get off?
All right, I'm going to give it to you.
I want some fun, man. I'm having a good time laughing on the plantation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a young lady on. She's very learned. She was on the Eye Opener Saturday, but she wasn't following the science as long as me. But I have a lot of people that agree with me and those who can't see what's going on. She said, I was discussing sudden infant death syndrome and sudden adult death syndrome. So she's saying, you know, I saw the contemporary study. I can't remember the name of the doctor, and they discovered this new enzyme deficiency, right?
Yeah.
HGC or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big word, but the thing is, I know it's a butyrate. It's organic. So what they don't realize is some certain factors you go in when you see a study. A study is just that, a study. It has to be replicated. It has to be peer-reviewed. Right?
Right.
And then on top of that, the fact that there's an enzyme deficiency, I want to know what is the underlying cause of this enzyme deficiency, whether there are external environmental factors. You forget one of the predispositions to sudden infant death syndrome was that you put the baby on his belly, right?
That's
even when they couldn't explain what was going on, because I was probably following this up as long as she was longer than she was living, because I was doing this like from the 90s. And so remember, in some of the deaths, they discovered pertussis, MRSA, standard trophomonas or whatever, and some staph infections and some other superbugs. But it was a compoundment of complexities that they couldn't give a concise, conclusive reason. Even the study that she talked about is not conclusive for sudden infant death syndrome. Now, I'm having fun on the plantation, just letting them know that I'm above the cycle, the psyops that they're chewing, right, about sudden adult death syndrome. You know, that's a bunch of BS, right, because it's nebulous, it's cloudy, it's foggy. So what you want to do now...
I talked about that, I think, about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Dr. Diaz, and I want to touch on the flu strain too, but the thing is, they're creating this cloudiness. It's too vague, sudden adult death syndrome. I'm juxtaposing it, but just after the release of the Pfizer clinical trials, and we see the predisposition. I mean, we see that healthy, normal people without heart problems previously, falling over with dysrhythmia and all type of cardiac dysfunctions, etc. That's the basic best of it. I can describe it for now. So that's what I'm saying. So you want to create this paradigm in which I have to accept the sudden adult death syndrome. Sudden adult death syndrome. What type of cloudiness is that? You know, it has to be more underlying factors. They have different euphemistic terms they put on the death certificate, etc. But this is what we see now. They want me to get conditioned
to
people that dropping out of diet.
They want people to be comfortable with that. And I would say that is very unusual. Even in my husband's family, he had two uncles that died suddenly. Now, they might have had heart problems, but I'm seeing just as anecdotally a lot of, and I would have to look at the numbers. Sadly, you know, we don't get a lot of numbers. A lot of people just personally talking, me, you, everybody, talking to other doctors, there is a lot of sudden death.
I'm juxtaposing it to me, the 300,000 pages, 77,000 released thus far, I guess, because it's supposed to be 11,000 a month. Last I checked was 65,000. So 300,000 pages is a part of the contrivance. You want to create all of these pages so you could have a needle in a haystack here. This what I see. But even as far as the influenza strain, and you know, all of these viruses basically look the same and phenotypically, right? And you know, something I was saying from the beginning. No. You see, I have to give self praise is no praise at all. But I have to give myself credence. I am not looking for anybody to give it to me, because I was at the crux of this whole scenario is antigenic shift and viral reassortment. And so the thing is, the flu viruses are the only viruses that go through antigenic shift. which means they're able to exchange genetic material within this, the species and the subtypes. So why do a gain of function on this virus, knowing it's already highly mutagenic because they have 8 segments, and then that means A, B, and C, whichever one infect the same cell, you have 8 segments exchanging genetic material. 2 would be the mother and the father, and then the rest would be reassorted. So that means that you knew what, you see, all of these viral merry-go-round vaccine, variant, vaccine, variant, this is by design, you know. And then notice the indemnity. So this is all, you know, things are so obvious to me, are so clear, like, it's unbelievable.
It seems very unclear to a lot of people because the minute you bring this up, and these are, you provide this kind of science to them, you know, they talk about science a lot, but when you present the science to them, they find every excuse why that science, you know, they can't actually look at it. So it's a very strange phenomenon that's going on. I think, you know, when we look back at this, some people are going
to
feel
listen to me. When we look back at anything in retrospect, we see all of the follies, you know. I mean, even the studies with the mask bearing, as far as the microplastics found in lungs, lodged in lungs, tissue, et cetera, in nasal pathways and all that. And so there's a lot of information being released on the Pfizer released clinical diet trial, and that even with the whistleblower and the lawsuit that they're facing. But you see, it's all in money. When you look at the amount of money these people have made on fraud.
But if you just look at what's happening in Europe, because they're always about 6 months or so ahead of us, a lot of them have dropped all of their COVID restrictions. You have the UK that's actually saying that they're going to pay people $120,000, $150,000 for vax injuries. You've got the Canadian case where someone has actually won a case. So we are very behind in this country in terms of that, which is a good thing.
We not even, Dr. D, I appreciate you so much. Sometimes I don't even appreciate you until I'm off the air. You know, the thing is, all of these things you said, we was willing to build a paradigm, but we can't do nothing for our people. And the former PM, you know, in all honesty, if I had my way, and this information is to go to an international court of justice, the scientific court, with the smartest scientists or most knowledgeable scientists in the world, epidemiologists, I want to hear from the pathologists and all, because those guys are seeing the data, and they're not seeing the chatter. So by them being the pathologists, they're actually seeing peculiarities or idiosyncrasies in organs, and this is unusual post pandemic and during the pandemic, so their input is important.
Even with the Pfizer dumps that are coming up, we can see that, you know, the grounds for them even getting emergency use authorization is very weak.
Yeah, but not only just the unusual, you
terms,
know,
mortality rate, the lack of numbers, the number of possible side effects, and none of that was discussed prior to the release. So it's a very scary thing, but the powers that be right now are still all for it. So here we are.
Watch trial site. But on trial site, right, it's a scientific thing, right? Now watch this here. The 3 weeks before the emergency use authorization, I think it was a couple of companies, there's also a European study. I can't remember everything verbatim, but in short, there was, this is what is on the release clinical trial data, there was a breach and lack of RNA integrity as far as impurities, and then I went on to read where it'd be agarose electrophoresis. I guess that's a form of purifying the mRNA from contaminants, et cetera, along that line. And so if you had RNA integrity proof, you wrote this, I wish I could remember the other rest. It's so damning. Like, it's frightening. These guys knew. Listen to me. Everything goes up. If you take this up another time, but we need a scientific journalist. You're doing the job.
Yes, 52. I know you always get passionate about these things.
Yeah, but Dr. D, I have to get passionate in the plantation.
I told you, and I told you this like around, I think, the end of December, early January. I had to just relax about it and leave a lot of stuff to God, because I can see it plainly. You can see it plainly. And there's a lot of people out there that don't see it at all.
Yeah, you totally listen to me, but guess what? Guess what he needs them to understand? Go out of it anyhow, because he could reveal all lies. Whether I hear the day or I ain't going to give it. All lies. If I tell my fiance a lie or I tell someone a lie, it can be revealed. Give time.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And all it is time. You know, all it is time before the truth is completely in front of us. It's very difficult to hide the truth for a very long period of time. And I think they've had a very long run. But
the former PM was willing to play this out to the T in ignorance.
Well, ignorance seems to be the theme of the last few years.
You're the better
right? It seems to be the theme for the last few years. And so this has been a shocking 2 years for myself. It's been an eye-opener and a learning experience. But, you know, I have faith that at the end of the day, everything will work out just fine. I put a lot of this stress and weight on my shoulder. I placed it on God's shoulders, because that's all that we can do. We can pray and we can do what's best for ourselves. I pride myself as a physician in speaking in truth and being able to do the research and being able to understand what's going on from multiple levels. And it was a lot, because there's a lot of information that's been put out there, a lot to sort through, some of it good, some of it bad, some of it reckless. There was misinformation here and there. And then, you know, there was a lot of politics that came involved in this whole situation. And so I think as we remove the politics from this and people start to see it's hard to keep under a bush, eventually it's like a fire. Eventually there's smoke, and then the fire is all consuming. And that's the thing about the truth. It's very, very difficult to hide for very long periods of time. So people can bury their heads in the sand, and people can pretend that, you know, things are one way versus the other. But a lot of people, and a lot of common people, you know, people who they don't call educated, a lot of these people have common sense. And to tell me that I'm not seeing what's right in front of my eyes is very difficult. That trick seems to be easier on a lot of people with higher education, sadly. Well, I wouldn't say higher education, you know, in between education, because when we looked at the spectrum of who was thinking a particular way, we saw the most educated people also saw the truth. And then the people who were maybe not as educated also saw the truth. So it was the people in the middle. So I find that the people in the middle want to keep things the way that they are. They don't want to go outside of the box. They don't want a different perspective. They just want to be a part of the collective. And by having that type of mindset, it's easy for them to be to go through like this mass transformation psychosis, in a sense where they are just going to follow the line and they see nothing else until they're told differently. And I think that a lot of education has been grooming people towards this way of thinking. And so it's very hard for people who will think out of the box, who are innovative and have an intuitive mind to fall into that. And so this is what we saw. We saw those who were able to think for themselves, kind of separating themselves from those who were just taught to learn or to go a certain way. And so being educated doesn't mean being intelligent, nor have the common sense to survive outside of academia. And so you need a bit of common sense. You need some, also, I would call it foresight and wisdom. So a lot of times that comes from God. And so it goes beyond having an education. And this is what we saw. We saw a separation of those who just went with whatever they were told. And then you had those who asked questions and kept a mind of their own. And it really opened my eyes to how a lot of people view the world. And those views usually what leads to where they are. And looking back, I'm sure that a lot of them are going to be surprised at what they did and how they thought. But we are where we are. And all I can say is, everybody, it's about time for the show to end. So I want you to have a good night. I want you to stay safe, keep healthy, get your physical so you know where your health is, because there is a lot of different things happening out there. So take care of your health, yourself, Bahamas, and the world, because we do have people who listen to us from the USA and Canada. So be careful. Take care of yourself. Take care of your mind, your body, and your soul. And never let other people feel like they can trample on your perspective and your thoughts if you know within yourself that you're doing what's right. And so thank you for listening again on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. Dinosaur Archer Cartwright, Family Medicine Specialist. We'll see you guys next week for another exciting show. Good night.